Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a surprising new episode of the fifth season of The Worst Idea of All Time. Guy Montgomery, hello.
Hello, Tim. It's not just a surprising episode. It was a surprising couple of hours to spend on a Sunday as a man who sort of thought he'd washed his hands of and walked free from the Emmanuel Through Time franchise. Only release is still trapped behind a paywall.
Let me talk you through this journey, Guy. It was brought to our attention that there is another Ali Hayes-driven Emmanuel Through Time movie called, Emmanuel and the Chocolate Factory, which is a Willy Wonka parody in the Emmanuel Through Time series. Now, my understanding is that this movie was only released in Japan. I was provided by one of our dear listeners two locations to get it, which were both Japanese websites. Makes sense. So I yesterday went for a big long walk during lockdown to go and find a prepaid credit card to purchase.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't want to trust my own Visa credit card to a website that I couldn't sort of understand the translation of or put a lot of faith in, because I'm not aware of, you know, the website's pedigree. So went on my big journey, got myself a Prezi card, which is a Visa thing, came home, went through, used Chrome because it's got a built-in language translator, followed through some broken English that I could sort of ascertain as to navigating to a rental period. And then it turns out that and on both websites that I was provided to obtain this movie, it was to rent a DVD, which would be posted to my address in Japan, a place I do not live. So it was all for naught. However,
wow!
While doing this research and trying to find if there was any other location I could find the Emmanuel and the Chocolate Factory movie, I stumbled across these Japanese translated titles of the Emmanuel Through Time series. So you remember Emmanuel Skin City?
Yeah, I do.
Well, the transliteration in Japanese is Skinless City, which is not quite the same.
No.
There's also Emmanuel Sexy Twilight, which they did not call it in the English version, I think for copyright reasons.
That is a title that does its job, though.
Yes, absolutely. Emmanuel, what we know is Emmanuel, what was it, the Naked Agent 69 in 0014 or something like that?
Yeah.
Is known to Japanese audiences who wish to observe the title in English as, for some reason, Emmanuel Humiliation Reward.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like the idea of there being sort of a reward for surviving humiliation, or as a motivation to get to the other end of it.
Yeah. It's nice that you wouldn't just get humiliated for nothing. You're going to get a payout as a result. Yeah. There's Emmanuel Paranormal Ecstasy, which was, I can't remember what the English one's called, but it was very quite, it was like, you know, ghostly sex times something. And then there was Emmanuel Insert with Unknown, which I was like, what the fuck is that one? And it turns out that was Emmanuel Forbidden Pleasures, which was the big mashup one that we watched about third in, which we should have watched as the wrap up because it was basically a flashback episode to all the previous movies in the Quintology.
Yeah.
Is Quinn's five, isn't it? What's seven? Septology?
Sept.
But this may not even be a septology because I was basing that on the movies we knew about. I stumbled into this whole other one, which was Emmanuel in Wonderland, and I was like, I wonder what one that is the translation of. And it was a movie we hadn't even seen, Adventure into the Woods, which is like a sort of slightly parallel to the, I don't even know if this is canonically part of Emmanuel through time, but it does reference it, and it is starring Ali Hayes, who is our Emmanuel in the Emmanuel through time series.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, isn't it? It's sort of a bit of a Hobbs and Shaw situation within the Fast franchise.
That's
because it is undeniably related. Like, it features all the same featured players, and it even top and tails it with your traditional time traveling blimp setup.
Yes,
but it is an altogether different kind of movie, and I would almost argue genre of movie.
Yes,
like. And it sort of, it casts a new light to look through the entirety of the Emmanuel Through Time franchise, because this is an out-and-out musical. This is like, I'd say, I can't remember the number, 8 or 9 songs, like.
Maybe more.
And I would say one sex scene.
Yes.
Which is actually told in a song.
What is painfully clear in this movie is that this was put into the hands of someone who genuinely just wanted the opportunity to make a musical and finally was given a little bit of resources to make it happen. Because after the first 20 minutes...
You really got to put the emphasis on little bit.
Do you know what? To their credit, they figured out how to use the fucking green screen in this one. Because one of the early scenes where they do an Alice in Wonderland-style entrance into this musical universe, they have Emmanuel, she eats a muffin, right?
Yeah, she's got two options, eat me or drink me.
Which is the same as in Alice in Wonderland. So she eats the thing, and then she grows very, very large in her room, and they pulled off the effect.
Yeah, and can I say, sexiest part of the movie. I love...
Really?
There's nothing I love more than seeing a giant nude woman hemmed in by a little room.
That really,
really
gets you
spins
going.
My wheels. And then just as I was getting excited, they took it all away from me because she drank the potion. And she didn't just shrink down back to regular size. Oh, no. She shrank down so teeny weeny. And the way that they did this, they used a great perspective trick where when she was giant, she was holding a key which became tiny. And then when she was small, she was holding the same key. But the key was no longer tiny. The key was giant. She was smaller than the key.
This is some Peter Jackson level Weta Workshop style visual effects to bring
it does
us
have
into
the feeling of a
world.
Movie that was made in between Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Yes.
You get the sense that some of those top dogs at Weta Workshops were looking for a side hustle.
So Richard Taylor was like, we've got all this compute power sitting at our disposal and nothing to throw it at. What's that? Someone involved in Emmanuel wants to make a musical? We're in.
Yeah. So I didn't know this movie existed, obviously, and you came across it in your travels while you fastidiously and nobly tried to track down chocolate porno. And you told me we'd be watching it, and you said it looks like it could be a bit of fun. And I put it on, and I immediately, the first thing I observed was the 1 hour and 38 minute runtime, which is only like, 9 minutes longer than all the other Emmanuel Through Time franchises, but there's a psychological barrier that made it feel a lot girthier. And I settled into it, and honestly, I think it might be to do with them abandoning the porno angle entirely, and like also just... what I'm trying to say is that I enjoyed it the most of any of these movies. Like, I really,
Great, 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 great. I'm so glad to hear that.
It really recontextualized the rest of them because it's like, it changed it from being a ragtag group of, like, actors in Hollywood trying for their break through the medium of erotica. And it's sort of like, it made me see the audition process and all of these people you know, like if they're being cast across an entire series of films or a franchise of films, and they're like, so we're going to do one of these, one of these, one of these, and we're doing a musical number, all of these people were triple threats. These people didn't just go into an audition room and like read some lines and, you know, talk about how comfortable they are having sex on stage. They sang and they danced. These are triple threats. They suck, they fuck, and they perform in musicals.
Yeah. They it wasn't just the screen talent that you saw. It was the backstage stuff. It was the production. They actually went to the trouble of recording these songs properly, an unparalleled level of audio competence. Yeah, I could hear everything.
But it made, like, in terms of the featured players, the people that we're seeing, it felt like a real, like, either high school or repertory theatre style musical. Like, you've got a lot of the secondary actors are recurring as different supporting roles in the background of big song and dance numbers that are afforded to a few of the actors. And, like,
do you know what this was?
Go.
Emmanuel Through Time is all out of money and they're going to shut us down unless we can put on the best damn talent show this cinema-going audience has ever seen.
And we are going to fly so close to the copyright law sun, you would not believe it. This movie...
I wrote down some time codes, actually. Can I play some stuff while you're talking?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This movie, like, you know, it's like... Someone, because Into the Woods is referenced in the title, I think, which was a Broadway play that got adapted into a Hollywood film. And, like, in the sense that it's a musical and she kind of spends some time near a bush, it is a bit like that. But this is mostly like Shrek.
Check this out. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if George Baker is alive or dead, but he must be spinning at his grave.
I love that. Was the most interesting thing about that is that was the only song that they decided to make like an out and out. I don't know if parodies, right? But where they were like, this is the blueprint for the song we're doing. We're doing Little Green Bag, but it's about a little blue dog. And then all of the other ones seem to be like Emmanuel Through Time originals. And
I was going to ask you that. Like, did you recognize any of the other songs?
I didn't.
Because I didn't either. And I just figured I must not know what they were.
I thought that too, but then it was too many. And then, honestly, I think it made this one the worst song because it punctured the reality of the movie. It reminded you that other music and other people performing music exists. And you're like, oh.
And that they weren't afraid to... borrow at least once from an existing, like, if they had just done that, if we had Meatloaf numbers in this, it would have been so good, which I actually thought they did once or twice. I was like, this sounds like it could be a bad ripoff of a Meatloaf song, but
like, in this movie we traipse through every fairy tale, fable, children's story, film, like, it feels like the producers could remember and probably get their hands on from a costume shop.
Yeah, so I wrote some of these down. So Into the Woods, as Guy alluded to, is a Stephen Sondheim joint that he – and Stephen Sondheim, if you don't know him, he's like Broadway royalty. He did Sweeney Todd, West Side Story, and he did Into the Woods, which is a musical mashup of the Brothers Grimm story. So there's like – Rapunzel characters, Cinderella, Jack and the Beanstalk. So this kind of takes that framework of kids' stories, but not just from Brothers. This is grabbing like Alice in Wonderland, Snow White, Little Red Riding Hood. The Big Bad Wolf is in here doing blackface for no reason in particular.
Yeah.
Jack and the Beanstalk, I think, is in this.
Jack and the Beanstalk's in there. The Jack that they have in this movie is like, they have his backstory is filled out by every Jack that you've heard of as a child. So he's Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk, who's also Jack from Jack and Jill, and his mother lives in a shoe. Like, they're really cramming a huge amount of pre-established backstory into all of these characters. And I guess because I think we spoke about copyright law recently, weirdly, I guess that they have rights to say, like, to label them as certain members of these characters, like... Because in other ones, like, there's a Kermit in it, but they call Kermit the Frog Kermine the Frog, which...
Well, yeah, because Kermit's going to be, like, copyrighted up the wazoo. That's going to be protected. But these other things, I don't know. It's like, these are adapted folklore tales.
Yeah.
So I don't think that... I don't think Disney...
in this movie. The Tin Man and the Scarecrow are in this movie.
Well, yeah, Wizard of Oz is different because, like, the Wizard of Oz is you know, it's not that old, and a guy definitely wrote it. L. Frank Baum or something like that. He, you know, and that's probably under copyright somewhere.
And then also, like,
but it's weird that they care.
Wizard of Oz, they also kind of allude to, like, Wicked, which is, like, also a source of inspiration, I think, where it's like, you know, you're showing the parts of well-known musicals or intellectual properties that aren't shown in their most known telling.
The point being, this has been made by someone who loves musicals. This isn't a musical who has been made by someone who, like, isn't familiar with the genre and doesn't have their favorite show. Like, this is someone who is into Broadway and wanted to make their own one and used the Emmanuel pornography series as a vehicle to be able to, like, achieve this. And I've actually not written down their name. I think it was a woman's name from memory. But it was like, I do remember at the start credits seeing the normal kind of names that we were used to. And then this other person, I was like, that's who they got in. That
well,
is the person.
It's amazing because they, like, truly, they get so attached and waylaid by the musical element that, like, this is not a porno.
There's like Mr. Goodstein. I found it.
There's exposed body parts, but yes, they're not sexualized. They're purely incidental. The Emperor's New Clothes are in this. At one point, yes, Emmanuel uses the Emperor's New Clothes to talk her way out of prison because the guard's like, you're in prison for indecent exposure. And she's like, no, I'm wearing the latest and haut, I'm wearing a fancy outfit. And then he's like, ah, yes, so you are.
It was rad. That rocked. And then he gave her a coat because he
got... everyone has the same eye for fashion as him.
He got tricked. He got bamboozled by Emmanuel was like, do you love my dress? He's like, you are naked. And she was like, no, only idiots can't see the dress. I'm wearing an elegant dress. He's like, oh, yes, of course. No, it's fantastic. And then he says, but, you know, some of these other guards might be too stupid to see the dress. Yeah. So I'm going to give you my coat. And it is a woolen coat. And then they go to the next frame and she's in like a PVC fake leather coat. Yeah. It's like, okay, guys, all good. I found the woman, by the way. Esther M. Goodstein, I believe, is the person who put their musical-loving fingerprints all over this. And she now owns something called The Goods, which is in Los Angeles, California. I don't know what The Goods is, but she was at Click Productions for many years as a producer, which is...
great Click Productions.
It's the house that made this.
I loved that it wasn't... Like, I loved, you know, one of the criticisms I've had and one of the frustrations I've felt with some of these has been that it's been straddling the line between genre parody and porn. And I love just throwing one of those out the window and saying, we're doing this. And then I also love seeing how far this, like, production stretched itself. Like, when you played Little Blue Dog before, watching that, I was like, oh, wow, this is really jarring and great. And, like, you know, this is bad, but also, you know, really enjoyable. And then it was the backup dancers in Little Blue Dog. So there's, I can't remember, he's having sex with Little Bo Peep. This guy's having sex with Little Bo Peep behind a bush or a shed or something. And Emmanuel sort of stumbles upon the noise of them having sex and she hears them finish. And then they run away and she goes, oh no, my sheep. And then you're like, ah, yeah, Little Bo Peep. And then this guy, who I can't remember exactly what he's drawing from, but he's like, oh no, my dog. And then he starts doing Little Blue Dog. And as he's doing it, two backup dancers come out and they're wearing blue t-shirts and underpants and then blue socks with like stockings with like chunky cork heels on one strap sandals. And like, it just really, I really was on the set and I really was with the performers.
The mere fact that there were backup singers and dancers in some of these numbers, I was blown away. I was so impressed. This speaks to nothing but the low bar that the rest of the Emmanuel Through Time series has set for itself, but it absolutely pole vaulted over the quality bar that the rest of
and
the films.
The number get of to. Musical numbers, it's like there was a. I didn't read the credits in their detail because they also did a really cool thing where the credits had your classic bloopers playing next to them in this one.
There was your 8 minutes as well. The film actually stopped dead on 90, and then we had some credits started up with, I think, another whole other original song, and then some bloopers after that.
But there was a busy choreographer working on this. And I don't know if you describe them as being a great choreographer, but they did choreograph a lot of things.
Busy's a great word. I love that. How would you describe? I'm a busy comedian. Are you good? I'm so busy. I'm busy all the time.
I would not describe myself as a busy comedian.
You're in lockdown. I will play one of the songs, though, if I may, that I thought
I would love that.
Absolutely ripped. And this was for Old Mother Hubbard Who Lives in a Shoe. That's right, eh?
There was an old lady who lives in a shoe. Old Mother Hubbard, she lives in a cupboard, bro.
Oh, fuck, of course. Well, this woman doesn't live in a shoe either. She revealed to us that it was metaphor. No one lives in a shoe.
Yeah, she lives in a metaphor.
Here's I've got to turn the volume on. Here's her song. And this woman, she can kind of sing. Well, I've been working in the kitchen since the early morning light. Cooking and baking, and you know I do it right. There's pumpkin pie and stuffing, and the turkey sure smells fine.
Yeah.
Do you know what's so funny, which you can't see, you can only hear, both guy and audience. So she does what, like a cool, like a windmill kick across a table, you know, fanning her dress out. But she's wearing black Spanx underneath. So they have forgotten it's porno. Like, that's a great opportunity to show some naked female form. And they're like, nah, fuck all that. We're doing a musical now.
We don't want to distract from the music. This was like an incredible subplot in it. So this is the old woman who lives in a shoe. And that's how Jack, the dastardly, very busy Jack from the up the hill to fetch a pail of water and from the beanstalk and every other Jack you can think of, he describes her as an old woman. She's not. She's a young mum who's married an absolute piece
of
shit.
Tell it like it is, guys. She's a young, hot mum.
She's a young, hot mum, and she married, would you believe it, just her luck, she married Peter of Peter Pumpkin Eater fame. And this fucking layabout just sits on the couch watching sports, drinking beer, ignoring her, asking for everything, offering nothing, to the point that he actually, like, she sort of sings this song at him, like, and to Emmanuel to contextualize it. She's like, I fucking work myself to the bone to put a turkey on this table, and for what? For nothing. And then Peter Pumpkin's like, I'm so sick of these songs. I'm going down to the pub, or what is it, Rosie's Canteen, or whatever the sex club in this weird fairy tale land is. And he goes, and then later on, he gets busted cheating. And actually, we're rooting for the old woman who lives in a shoe. And she's like, I don't need this in my life, Peter. Why don't you go fuck a pumpkin? Because I'm out.
It's so good. It's a brilliant story within a story. And that's the kind of thing that you get treated to when you're doing these. What is it called? And it's like an anthology within a single movie. So sometimes you get like anthology movie series or anthology TV series. This is like many, many characters and small tales. This is Pulp Fiction.
This is like historical fairy tale fiction. Like, this is, you know.
I mean, directly, it's Into the Woods. I don't know why I'm picking like a different example. It's Into the Woods.
Yeah. I can't get Shrek out of my head, but I guess it is. It's both, because you're just taking you're taking all these known things and you're putting them together. Pinocchio was in this movie.
Guy, I don't know if I've ever seen Shrek.
Are you serious?
In fact, I'm pretty sure I've not seen any Shrek ever, any times.
You have got to be taking the piss.
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. Why would I have seen it?
Because everyone has seen Shrek. And it's directed by a New Zealander. It was a claim to fame for our fair nation for a while.
A lot of things are directed by New Zealanders that I have not seen.
I know that's true, but not a lot of them achieved the success and, like, also the ubiquity. Like, Shrek
has never seen The Piano. That won an Oscar.
Yeah.
I think Shrek might have as well, though.
Shrek is like an online language. Like,
yeah.
Do you not like click through and pass and around all of these Shrek memes and all this Shrek content, and you're like,
Guy, I've been on the internet since birth. You don't need to know the original source material to be able to speak in meme.
I know, but are you not, like, curious how something like this became so widespread?
I guess it would be probably worthwhile watching at some stage.
I would be really interested to know what you think of it.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel very compelled to watch it. I don't think I'll enjoy it or hate it enough for it to be interesting.
It's a comedy movie led by comic leads Mike Myers and Eddie Murphy.
Mike Myers, famous for co-hosting with Kanye West during Hurricane Katrina when he said those immortal words.
That's the number one thing when you go on his IMDb.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Yeah.
And his frantic on the spot via satellite sort of eyes only communication with Chris Rock from memory is like one of the most funny, frantic moments I've ever seen on a television screen in my life.
The curtain really drops in that moment.
Canadians aren't built for that kind of conflict. They're just not. Like, you can't serve up a tamale that hot. But I guess no one kind of, the world didn't really know the depths of Kanye West's chaos at that point.
No. And, I was thinking about that recently. I was thinking about Kanye recently. We don't need to talk about Kanye.
Get into it. What were you thinking about Kanye? This was a musical pornography?
Yeah, it's true. I was thinking that moment popped into my head when I was running. As much for like remembering Mike Myers as what Kanye was saying. And I was like, wow, Kanye's like, he's got just this incredible track record of these like really, memorable moments. And he almost, it appears, because he's obviously got he's got a lot of thoughts in his brain.
He's got bipolar. I think that's quite public, and I think even he's sort of
He doesn't seem to care what side of history he lands on. Like he's an example of someone who's truly living in the moment, and it often to his detriment.
Yeah, mental illness is a hell of a drug. You get a lot with it. It's pretty crazy to be the guy who is. In Tim Batt's brain, famous for saying George Bush doesn't care about black people and then becoming a Trump supporter later on. You've run the whole gamut.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Well, and then running for president yourself.
Yeah, true that. True that.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, I want to play another song.
I'm so glad you're doing this, because these songs truly need to be heard to be understood and believed.
I think this one's called Do the Jiggle.
Oh, yeah.
This features a plastic trumpet, which for some reason, like A, renting a trumpet is really cheap. Trumpets are not, in terms of the brass instrument world, they're not an expensive instrument to come upon. You can get, in New Zealand dollars, you could buy a student's trumpet, brand new, for around $1,000, which would be around $700 US. You can rent them so cheaply. So cheaply.
This is the first song. This is the introduction to the musical component of this film, and it's the Mad Hatter, who's like, he's a really bad actor, the guy who's playing the Mad Hatter. And he pretty much feels like he gives people horny tea.
It is what I'm playing. You've got such a better memory than me. I've just seen this movie and I didn't know like what bit this was.
Well, I remember it was the first song and he was such a bad actor and then they gave him the first song and I was like, I can't believe like you're asking so much from someone who's barely hanging on. And he's the Mad Hatter, he's a gigolo and he's having sex with Goldilocks.
Do you know what this feels like to me? This feels like I'm Jimmy Kimmel and you're setting up a clip for a movie you're promoting right now.
So this is the scene where Emmanuel meets the Mad Hatter and he's having an orgy with Goldilocks and some others and they find out his profession. Anyway, you'll see.
Let's play the clip.
So the jiggle dance is it's codified language for sex. And the gigolo is the Mad Hatter's he's got a side hustle aside from wearing hats with lead in them. He also fucks people for money.
It's mercury, I think.
Oh, it is mercury. Lead doesn't make you nuts, it just makes you sick. Is that right?
Was that lead? Oh yeah, lead will kill you.
What's the deal with that?
What do you mean?
Where were people getting their lead that was making them sick? Lead, in the water.
Lead was in everything. Lead's in water now, which is bad, but lead was in paint and it was also in petrol, which was a big issue because you put that in your car and then it becomes a gas. And it's quite hard to get away from a gas.
Mm.
Look, that probably exhausts all the notes I have.
Oh, well, you don't need to worry because I've got all sorts of notes.
Yeah, I'm going off book now, just like this musical did at certain times, especially during the credits. Can I say this? I was so fucking impressed. I was so fucking impressed that these guys got it together. And there's a competition in New Zealand called the 48-Hour Film Competition.
Yeah.
And this has been going for about 15 years now, give or take.
It's a great initiative. There are variations of it in other places.
You probably know exactly what it is, really. The name's on the tin. You've got one weekend to create an entire short film with a small team, or maybe solo. And our version in New Zealand started by a guy called Ant Timpson, who is an absolute legend. And it is the New Zealand one is like, I think, the most popular competition of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere. It's huge.
Taika Waititi won it a lot before he started really doing anything. I remember, like, in real time, I remember they used to play the finalists on TV. I remember watching his one. He was a vampire judge in a courtroom. Like,
He also did a really cool solo wartime one when he was, like, a soldier and he was just, like, popping up from behind a couch and getting shot and stuff.
It's like a veritable New Zealand film institution, this pipeline.
It is. Quick plug, I also won, it was part of a team that won it 1 year.
With a movie about jumping, child jumping.
That's right. But the reason I bring it up is because, so you get attributed the name of your lead character, a line of dialogue, a prop, and the genre that you must contain for your film to prove that you made it that weekend. You get given that at 7 p.m. on the Friday, you hand in at 7 p.m. on the Sunday. It is everyone's biggest fear to get musical as a genre. Musical is on the board every year, and it is the most lamented. And it's because it's fucking hard. It's really hard to make a musical movie. These guys did it, Guy. Maybe they did it in a weekend. It wouldn't shock me to hear that. The Emmanuel three-time franchise.
The 48-hour film thing, I couldn't stop thinking the whole time I was watching it. It had 48 hours energy littered throughout it, in the sense that it's like, is it perfect? No. Is it good enough? Yes. And is it good enough is a great byline for this Emmanuel Through Time series.
Mm. Like, there's a lot of musical movies that they say they're a musical, but they've got, what, like three songs in it? This has got about 10. It's impressive.
There is probably an argument to be made that it was too many songs. That maybe if they concentrated working a little harder on seven of the songs.
There was so little pornography in this. Ali Hayes, you do see topless quite a lot, but that's after the first 15 minutes, that's sort of it.
You see,
a few people get their rocks off.
Yeah. Her, like my shining light.
Sorry, you go.
Well, my shining light was actually her as Emmanuel. The wolf. So there's the catalyst for a lot of action. This is Emmanuel's. She goes through the blimp wormhole, and she gets trapped inside of this weird fairy tale universe, and she's trying to find a way out. And some people help her, and some people don't. But there's the wicked, not the wicked witch, but like the evil witch from Snow White.
She's a composer. She's a she's mainly
but she's
that, yeah.
Snow White appears, but no wonder if she keeps talking to the mirror on the wall. And she's trying to hunt down Emmanuel, and she sets her up at one point. She goes into a building to ask someone something. She comes across the big bad wolf from Little Red Riding Hood, and she's like, this is not what I need, and leaves. And then she sends Emmanuel in there. She's like, you need help? Go in there. She goes in there. She comes across the wolf, who, as Tim has said, is inexplicably in wolf face. It's a grey wolf. It's a grey area. And... the wolf is like, there's a lot of sort of 50-50 performances in this. The wolf is a very poor, like physically lacks charisma, has no confidence in their dance moves. They've got a choreographed dance to go with their song, which they also don't totally believe in.
Yeah.
And I was like super turned off by the wolf. But Emmanuel is turned on. And so, what's her real name?
Ali Hayes. She goes by Brittany Joy, yeah. I think is her credit.
Ali Hayes, the actor who plays Emmanuel, does an amazing job of slowly being turned on by this abysmal song and dance performance by this wolf. And I was watching that and I was like, you've really got chops. Like, this is, I can tell that you're being turned on right now.
Ali Hayes is, I will say this, an incredibly charismatic on-screen performer. She's got the sparkly, twinkly eyes. She's got an easy smile. She's someone that you want to hang out with on screen.
Absolutely.
She's done a great job of carrying many other lackluster actors in this Emmanuel through time series.
She holds this film. I mean, she's held the franchise together, but she holds this film together. All of the supporting players are also, by the way, from the blimp.
Oh, yeah. It's all your regular... Dude,
so which is what kind of makes it interesting is like it's not canon, but it is of the same cloth.
Which is an interesting, they reference The Wizard of Oz. It's sort of like and you were there, yeah. But they never actually do that. But that would have been a nice ending, I think, if she kind of came back, because she's somehow traveled through the wormhole by herself. Usually the whole blimp goes through, so you have the whole cast, you know, they're on the same page in an alien world. But this time, it's just been Emmanuel put through the wormhole. And it would have been nice for her to, like, wake up, I think, in the Emmanuel.tv blimp and be like, yeah, do the Auntie M, da-da-da. You were there thing. But it never happens. Can I say this? You brought up the mirror, mirror on the wall thing. So, you know, are you familiar with the Mandela effect?
Yes. It's
a huge misremembrance of something.
I actually don't remember how it pertains to Nelson Mandela. It's because
when he passed away, thousands, millions of people were like, no, that guy died in prison. Everyone was like, no, he didn't. He got out of prison and led the country of South Africa for a while. And everyone was like, no, he died ages ago.
And not for the, it's also the Berenstain Bears or the Burstein Bears or whatever.
That's right, yeah. So it's like a collective misremembrance of something. So, you know how everyone thinks it's mirror, mirror on the wall? Apparently, I can't verify this. I just read this recently. I saw it in a YouTube video, some shit. But in the Disney Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, in the movie that everyone knows that moment from, apparently it's magic mirror on the wall. Mirror, mirror on the wall is never said.
Well, the more you know.
How fucked up is that?
That makes sense because it is a magic mirror and it would pay in terms of storytelling to label that. So everyone's like, why is this person saying mirror twice and why is this mirror talking?
You got to let the kids know. You got to connect those dots
for them. The
mirror
is talking because it's a magic mirror.
There's big furry energy in this movie and I am here for it. We've got the big bad wolf in a full head-to-toe fursuit, and Emmanuel absolutely goes to town on a mound of fur that is around the pubis region.
Correct.
And I imagine anyone who is that way inclined into all things furry.
I'm not into furry myself, but I saw that stuff and I was like, this is fun.
I appreciate it. I can understand how one would engage with the world. And there's a few moments of that. I think there's maybe one other character who's furry. Or is it just, do I just keep seeing the big bad wolf actually a couple of times? I think he's in like three different scenes, but it's the full body fursuit that's kind of shit. Like, it's not a very convincing wolf. It's just like, oh, there's a guy in a fursuit.
Well, yeah. And then because there's the face paint, but then they've got like your elasticized prosthetic wolf nose, which is just a piece of elastic over the back of the head.
Anyway, it's a good time. It's a shout out to a particular region of the kink community. And I think it was a nice addition to the film.
It's a bit of a tease for them, though, isn't it?
Possibly, like, yeah.
You want to actually see these furries fuck.
You don't really see, not in a pornographic way, you don't really see anyone fuck in this movie.
No.
You just see them sing. You see them sort of like get to the point when they would fuck, or they've just finished fucking, or they've been caught, you know, at the end of coitus. But for a porno, for what, there's something parading around as being
something
part of a
flying under
series.
The Emmanuel banner.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly light on sex.
What I'm very interested to know that I have not looked up is where this comes versus the other one, spelt C-U-M-S. This was released in 2011, which I think is the same as the other one. So I don't know canonically, like, if this is in the middle of the rest of them or afterwards.
It feels like it belongs at the end, to be honest.
Yeah, same.
It feels like it should have gone after even the Emmanuel secret agent one, which is all told in flashback. I'm like, this is a nice way to cap the whole thing. Send us on our way.
I think it might have done that. So, yeah, depending on where you look, this either came out in 2011 or 12. This did at least some limited run of the festival circuit as well.
Great.
I saw it come up on a website, something called Queen's World. You've heard of Queensland? You've heard of Queenstown? This is the Queen's World Film Festival.
Wow.
And it played there in 2012.
That sounds real. That sounds legitimate.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It was a legit website. It seemed real to me at the time.
The internet's a trustworthy place.
To be honest, I don't think we need any visitations from any co-hosts.
The whole
today.
Time I've been crossing my fingers, legs, toes that neither of those guys had stopped by.
Nah, I don't think we need them. In fact, I think maybe we bop this one on the head.
Please,
I've had a cool time watching the movie, and I'm going to rate it out of a possible two Brothers Grimm. I will rate this film one Brother Grimm.
How many brothers are there?
Two, aren't there?
I don't know.
I think there's two.
So 50%. I'm going to rate this movie out of Shrek. So
holy fuck. I think there was a ton of brothers.
Yeah, I thought there were two.
Oh, no, wait. The literary, there was only two.
But they had other siblings.
It feels like they did. Sorry.
So, my rating system is out of Shrek. So obviously a full Shrek is 5 out of 5. A Shree, 4 out of 5. Shure, 3, etc., etc. And I'm going to give it
I don't want to tell you how to suck eggs, but I think the scoring should go it's at the lowest end it's Shrek, and the highest end it's Shrek 5, and middling is Shrek the 3rd. If it's kind of good, it's Shrek Ever After.
I will not be schooled on the Shrek universe by a self-professed ignorant. It's a Shree for me, Tim. 4 out of 5.
Shit, pretty high. Or Shrek Forever After, if you take this Philistine's adapted scoring system.
I'm like, how is somebody who's never seen Shrek familiar with all of the sequels and spin-offs?
I'm on the internet a lot, brother.
You're a maniac. So obviously we're there's not a firm close on when we're out of here with respect to Emmanuel.
I'm pretty ready to say a Vita Zane to Emmanuel and the Chocolate Factory, because I really have looked.
You don't want to get a DVD sent over from Japan?
It would take so long, especially now. we've got a whole crisis going on in terms of transport and stuff.
I'm all for fucking saying goodbye to this franchise.
Why don't you fucking order it from Japan, guy? How about you take the reins on that one?
Okay.
And then in a year and a half.
Yeah, you're going to fucking hate me when I show up at your
stop
house.
Stop doing
when this lockdown's finished and the season is finished and we're not even talking to each other anymore. And I show up and say, hey, Tim, we got one ass left to kick.
One big job.
Yeah.
We've got one big job left and then we're out.
So to my listener, I say thank you. And to you, Tim, I say fuck you.
Righto. Pretty rich coming from a massive piece of shit such as yourself. But I will say to our dear libertarian listener, keep up the good fight. Don't tread on me. And to Guy, I'll say go and fuck yourself.
I'm so chubbed up after this movie. It's the first thing I'm going to do.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.